So money is directly connected to the fear centers and the emotional centers of our existence, even though in itself, you know, it's just a story that we've created. It's the most amazing story that we've created. I think one of the interesting paradoxes or possibly ironies is that money is a story. You can take a little green piece of paper, one of your green pieces of paper, and you can go anywhere in the world with that green piece of paper, and someone will give you something real for it.
Hello and welcome to the Julian Gino podcast. On today's show, we have Dennis Harhalakis. He's a certified money coach and founder of Cambridge Money Coaching. He helps individuals and couples transform their relationship with money by addressing mindset, emotions, and communication. Dennis combines financial expertise with behavioral insights to create confidence, clarity, and healthier money habits for long-term success. Welcome to the show, Dennis.
Thank you very much, Juno. Lovely to meet you and Julia, of course. Thank you for inviting me.
Did I nail the last name? Did I pronounce your last name correctly?
You nailed it. Yeah, we're good to go. We don't need to
I knew you would. I knew you would.
Well, you guys, you're kind of Mediterranean, right? You got some Mediterranean blood in you. You know, right. You should know how to pronounce. We're neighbors.
Italian. Dennis, how did you get into money coaching?
Wow. It was actually in a bit of a dark place. I had done... walked out of a corporate job to move back to the UK with my three kids. And I was struggling to find a job and looking for something to do. And I thought, well, you know what? I spent 30 years in financial services. I know a lot about money. I need to try and do something useful with that. And I was looking at financial well-being for kids and financial literacy for kids. And I was listening to a podcast with it was a financial advisor podcast. And there was a financial planner who'd just done the money coaching course, the one that we know and love from the Money Coaching Institute of California. And she was explaining about where patterns, behaviors, where your money habits came from. And I listened to her and I had this realization that the whole of my life, I had been dragging around my father's money anxiety. It was his. It wasn't mine. And it was just such a revelation for me because it made me realize that I knew a lot about money, but not very much about money and myself. And I felt that this was kind of the missing link in my understanding around money, was understanding my own money behavior. So I went onto the website. I signed up for the webinar. I signed up for the money coaching course. I did it twice. And then I did the couples money coaching course. And that started my midlife career into my switch into money coaching. And it's been amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah. My husband and I also did the program and I didn't realize, I always knew it, but I want you to talk a little bit about the emotion behind money, because it's not all of numbers. And that's the reason why I didn't want to do it. Cause I'm like, I don't want numbers. I don't want to deal with that. And it's so emotional and I can't get over how it relates to your whole life and all of your anxieties and fears and sometimes even the arguments with the spouses. So talk a little bit about what you discovered.
So, yeah, I came from a very numbers-based place. Finance is numbers-based. But finance is numbers. Money is emotions. And that is because money is not about numbers. Money is about beliefs and values. Mm-hmm. So the biggest mistake that people make, or the most common mistake that people make when they look at money behavior, is they look at understanding the money piece. And that's not right. You need to understand the behavior piece. So if you want to say, you know, well, where do those behaviors come from? Where do your money behaviors come from? You don't look at understanding money. You need to look at where the behaviors come. And behaviors are all learned. They're all adaptive. They all come from this process in childhood, sometimes called the crucible of childhood. But essentially, we learn everything about behavior from our family of origin or you know, the environment we grew up in. And the simple reality of money as such, what we learn about money is based on the behavior of people around us. And the behavior of people around us money-wise when we're growing up is usually not great because our parents are acting out of their own behaviors, their own inherited behaviors that they got from their parents. And we don't have to go back very far to or in the 1800s. And that's, you know, even that's the start of psychology. So people are just acting out multi-generational patterns of behaviors and their little variations. You know, sometimes they, in money coaching, we talk about, well, what did you know when you grew up around this stuff? What did you repeat? What did you reject? What did you refine? And essentially, if the communication around money when you were growing up was emotional, it's going to imprint emotions on you. The other thing is that money touches all of our core security needs. So all the things that we need from food, sex, shelter, social acceptance, money buys all of those things. Money is the root to all of those things. So when we talk about money, it goes right through to the things that are that we are most reactive and most fear-based around. So money is directly connected to the fear centers and the emotional centers of our existence, even though in itself, you know, it's just a story that we've created. It's the most amazing story that we've created. I think one of the interesting paradoxes or possibly ironies is that money is a story. You can take a little green piece of paper, one of your green pieces of paper, and you can go anywhere in the world with that green piece of paper, and someone will give you something real for it. I mean, think about that. Isn't that just amazing? And if that piece of paper has a 100 on it, not a 1 or a 5, it's worth so much more than another little green piece of paper. Now, that is the most incredible story that humanity has created around the currency, around the US dollar. You know, and here's the funny thing, right? When the Taliban or whoever it is ransoming people, they want to be paid in US dollars, right? The great Satan, the great evil Uncle Sam. Okay, that's one thing, but I'll take the money, take the little green pieces of paper. It's that powerful. And so when you look at it that way, it's easy to understand how the money story, if money itself is a story, then the way we understand money in what we can do, be, or have with money itself is a collection of stories. There are no numbers involved. They're all stories. They're all narratives. And so if you want to understand about money, you need to understand how narratives are created, the narratives that we live with, the stories that we tell ourselves about what we can do, be, or have with money.
As a money coach, we use the archetypes. They're basically characters that are within us that act and behave in a certain way. When my wife and I got married, I was the warrior, quickly turned into the tyrant a couple of years after. My wife was the innocent. If you're listening to this and you're working with couples, how can we help couples or give them a couple, you know, bits of nuggets here right now to say, you know, looking at money, like, because most of the times that couples do fight, they are fighting about money, but money really doesn't seem as if that's, it's the reason why they're fighting. It's just a symptom. Can we help couples out a little bit and let them really see this in a different light?
Sure. And we're back to that misconception about budgeting is about organizing money. That's not strictly correct. Money is about beliefs and values. And unless you know what they are, what yours are, and what your partner's are, and where they come from, you'll never understand someone else's money behavior. So what we're not really arguing about money. What we're arguing about is different values and beliefs about what you could do, be, or have with money. And so when you don't understand someone else's behavior, that can be fatal. Like, the stats are out there that money is the biggest cause of divorce in probably globally, actually. And we can discuss that a little bit later. Mm. So it could be fatal. Beliefs, and this is core. Beliefs are what you can do, be, or have with money. And those are, you know, those are beliefs, right? So it's not about logic. It's about what I believe. And normally, I don't really know what I believe. Now, if you've done some self-awareness work, you've done some money work, you begin to understand where it comes from. So let's take an example. If I'm fairly safety orientated and I have an ex-scarcity mindset, so, but I work with anxiety, then I'm safety orientated, then I'm likely to be a strong saver. Saving comes before spending. in the dictionary, and in life, as my friend Michael Gilmore, who set up the Money Awareness and Inclusion Awards. He's a great guy. You should have him on your podcast. Saving comes before spending in the dictionary and in life. Now, so I have a need for safety, and therefore saving is important to me. You know, saving first, spend the rest, right? Now, if you don't have the same need, you're my partner, and let's just say you're more pleasure-seeking, then spending is more important with saving. And if you have an abundance mindset, then, well, you know, maybe you will well believe that you can always create more money. So why worry about it? Now, what's interesting about this is that those two fairly polar opposite mindsets can come from the very same childhood. So I don't know, mm-hmm. thinking to your own siblings, right, your brothers and sisters, once you get beyond three or two, actually, nobody's exactly the same. There can be polar opposites. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in a kind of scarcity mindset, scarcity environment. And so saving and being safe was very important to me. And actually, my brother also has a strong money anxiety. Now, you can grow up in that environment and you can go, oh, no, God, that was really awful. When I'm an adult, when I grow up and when I get my own money, I am not doing that. That was just really painful. It was just this scarcity and limitation, and you couldn't do what you wanted and you couldn't ask for anything because there was never any money and you were always told no. So the same space, you can come out to two different places, right? And all of it's there's the abundance mindset or the freely spending mindset and the safety spending mindset. And so interestingly enough, we can be attracted to someone who gives us the things we can't give ourselves. And then, there's this, I'm a little bit worried, a little bit anxious, and there's this fun, free spending guy, and he's generous, and he's everybody's best friend, and everybody likes him. That's actually, that's quite attractive, and that's fantastic, and it's really great. We go out all the time, we have so much fun, and everybody loves us. And then we have kids. Well, I lose my job. And now that fun, loving, free spending personality is making me feel really, really anxious because he doesn't want to sit down and talk about budgeting. Budgeting's for losers, right? And then when I question him, he's going to get really defensive, and then I'm going to get more scared, and then boom, right? Now we're in trouble because I don't understand my behavior. I don't understand your behavior, but I know I'm right. And what I know about your behavior is it makes me really scared. And what you're doing is makes me feel really, really unsafe. So all this is going on under the hood. And because as a society, no one models healthy communication around money. As a society, we have, I think it's almost a toxic relationship with money, but nothing is healthy around it. And then if you've got your parents modeling, so if you grew up in an environment where parents used to, argue and fight and doors were slammed and plates were thrown, then your ability to communicate around money is going to be based on the modeling that we're not on around you growing up. And so now we've got a situation where neither of us understand each other and we don't have the capacity for healthy communication around it. And that's a really hard spot. So you wanted me to say something helpful to do this. Now,
I think that was extremely helpful so far.
Well, it's interesting, but it's not how it explains what's going on, right?
It explains, yes, sure.
Because it's impossible to untangle the issues because we don't know what the issues really are. And we're looking in the wrong place. We think if I could just get him to sit down and stick to a budget, then it would all be fine, right? But that feels like constriction, and that feels like the awfulness that he went through in childhood. And that's the last thing he wants to do. So what I love about couples work is taking this space of conflict, which is the money space, what we argue about, and turning it into a source of curiosity and connection. All behaviors are learned. The reason that I want to save is because that makes me feel safe. The reason that you want to spend is because that helps you to feel alive and because saving felt awful. So the trick here is to suspend judgment, suspend all of this and go, you know what? Obviously, the reason you do what you do must make sense in some way. Let's talk about what What was it like to be you growing up? What lessons did you learn? What lessons did you learn about yourself, about money, and about money in yourself? And when you can approach it with curiosity and compassion, you can begin to understand. It's this beautiful moment working with couples when they look at each other and they go, oh, wow, you're not trying to wreck my finances. You're just trying to feel a little bit better. Mm. I'm not trying to restrict you, but I have, because I grew up in chaos and I have a deep need for safety. And if I can't feel safe, it's really hard to be around you with you. And it's really hard to interact with you. So, no, I'm not trying to tell you what to do or how to live your life, but I need to feel safe somehow. And if we can communicate around that and you understand and acknowledge my need for safety, we can work out a way to do it. And likewise, I can see that you have, you know, earned the right to spend money the way that you want to do it. And that's totally fine. I acknowledge that. Let's see how we can, now that we understand each other, we understand our stories, we understand what's driving each our behaviors, and we understand that we're not trying to fight. Let's talk about how we can take this and create and, a space that works for both of us, something that works for both of us. Mm-hmm. And each time we get triggered, we step back and we go, okay, fine. This is what's coming up for me. This is how I feel about it. What I'd like to do is discuss it with you. Are you able to meet me halfway? So that's the healthy communication framework that we do in the couples coaching. But it can only come from a space of awareness. It's like, well,
right.
And also understanding that the other person is doing what they're doing, not deliberately in a sense, but they're doing it because that's the coping mechanism that they grew up with. And that's how they learned to feel safe or to feel alive or to feel needed or to feel validated. And that's helpful.
I can prove to you why you're right about this. It's because you said before you hit the record button, connection before solution. Most men are solution and maybe we'll connect. Oh, we've got a money problem. Let's set the budget. And this is what we're going to do. I'm solving the problem. But how can I solve the problem if I haven't connected with your story and with my story and I haven't fleshed out the values and the beliefs? I'm doing it the opposite way. That's why the most of us, myself included, struggled for years and years and years around having that conversation and trying to connect.
Conversations, though, right? It's, yes. And I think that's probably what you hear a lot of, Dennis, is you have that one conversation with your spouse. Okay, we got it. We're good. and then a lot of people think it's like a one and done conversation. And there's a lot. I think what happens is once you start the process, all of a sudden other things come up and you're like, wow, let's connect over this too. You know what I mean? Right? Is that what you notice when you, okay.
So because it gets in the way of so much, if you can help people to not see it as a space of conflict, but as a space of potential connection and exploration. I never knew that about you, you know, I knew a little bit about your childhood, but you know, when you're on a first date, who talks about, you know, childhood wounding and deprivation and coping strategies, right? No one does
that. I think we did.
I don't know if we did. We just knew our kids.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, Dennis. And I think that's the issue, is you're so blinded by, you know, falling in love in the beginning that you realize at one point you're like, wait a minute, who is this guy? who is this? And I don't know. I mean, I know their background kind of, but I think it does take years to trust and to just uncover another layer of what you went through, right? Your childhood, all of a sudden you remember things. You're like, my gosh, I forgot all about that. But this is when we did money coaching. I was like, wow, I never thought of these things before. And so we've been married 27 years and we're just coming. We're like, oh my gosh, I forgot about this, you know? So there's hope.
So you have your hardwired patterns and you also have situations that change over time. So, you know, there are plenty of people that where you start off with two earners and then one goes, one stops to have children, obviously the one that is capable of bearing children. And they always wanted to go back to work. But then when they don't have children, when they have children, they realize that they don't want to go back to work anymore. Actually, they change. And the other one's going, well, you know, you said you go back to work. And so we have most of what passes for kind of money discussions is essentially unspoken arrangements or unspoken expectations about what the other person will contribute or will do. And those are based on, so mine are based on what my parents modeled to me, and my wife's are based on how that was organized. And so we just kind of, we go along and we kind of assume that, you know, this is how it'll turn out, but things change. People's beliefs about what they want to do and who they are change. A lot of times, it's assumed that in hetero couples anyway, that the man will do the finances, right? Well, that's not always what they want. And it's not always what they're very good at either. I mean, it is kind of a traditional thing, but it's not always what they want. Deborah has an amazing story about a financial planner she worked with, whose wife assumed that he was, you know, running the family finances because he was a financial planner. Now, he was a good financial planner. But one of the interesting things about that space is that when it comes to your own money, guess what? It all goes out the window because your own relationship with money is personal and emotional. Your relationship with your client's money is professional. He was great for his clients. Yeah. He was awful for himself. And he hated being under that pressure of assuming that. And he wasn't very good at it with the personal finances. And that made him go down a whole bunch of, down the shame, into the shame spiral. So, you know, it's just because it was assumed. She said, well, I assume you're the planner, you know, you want to do it. And he wanted a little support. And so if one of the couple is uncomfortable, and let's say, it's the guy, and the other one is even more uncomfortable, just shove over responsibility as much as possible, which makes it even more difficult. And because, as I said, we don't have this healthy communication framework, which is when this comes up, I feel really scared, angry, resentful, whatever it is, shamed, whatever. I need you to help me understand where you're coming from on this so we could sit down and sort it out. And then you can begin to make progress on it. We're not taught this. We're not taught to understand our own money behavior. I've asked thousands of people this. Did anyone ever show you how to understand or manage money? The answer is always no, except for kids whose parents were so obsessed with financial literacy, they created a whole bunch of trauma around it, which wasn't helpful either, that they're living with. And that's why they're coming to see a money coach. We just bumble along with this thing. And then go back to society doesn't model healthy communication. You don't see healthy communication. Money is this, money is that. It's actually positioned as the answer to all your problems. But what it creates is a sense of powerlessness and shaming at a societal level, right? Because you're supposed to be able to do that. You know, you don't earn enough, you don't save enough, you don't invest enough, you don't have enough, right? If it's positioned as the answer to all these things, if it's going to make you happy and successful and beautiful and everything like that, which it doesn't do, as we all know. But even you know, trying to get enough these days is very, very, very hard for most people. So again, that's kind of shaming. You know, what don't you understand? You know, what are you doing wrong? Yeah. What's wrong with you? Mm-hmm. And that goes back to our core child wound. So I think we're in a very, very toxic space around money in our society, because it's just it's not working well.
And I think what you said is important, is that we were never taught, or we were overtaught, so the question is, even what is enough? A lot of people don't even know what that answer. If I said to you, what's enough for you, would be different than my husband, would be different than me. And I think that's the problem too, is that we were, first of all, never taught, like you said. You know, my husband and I, we have 6 children. And they're all very different when it comes to money. They all have different beliefs, different views, different all of those. Is that enough? Right. What is enough? Not to my husband, it's not enough. But well, that's a different podcast. But I think that's important, because even as a couple, when we talk to couples, a lot of times we're like, we forget to work on each other. We forget to work on us as a relationship. Sure. I just spoke with a woman today. Her kids just went away to college. So they're home together by themselves, her and her husband. And she's like, everyone told me that it's going to be uncomfortable, awkward, and she's not going to like being home by herself. out with her husband, kids are away. She's like, I love it. And she's like, no one told me how great it was because we're learning about each other. And it's so different, she said, because we're so, you know, she's in her 50s and she's been married a long time. And she's like, no one talks about how great it can be because they're going on dates. They're doing things that they didn't, you know, they hadn't been able to do because their kids were home. Right. And I think that's the problem nowadays is we're so focused on kids, so focused on taking care of them, and we neglect each other.
Well, lots of things in what you said. What's coming up for me is, though, all the advice that she got was other people projecting onto her, right? Nobody reached out to her and went, you know, find out what she was or what she could be or whatever. It's not about her. It's like me giving advice to you. Yes. So, in the financial context, one of the challenges with that is that the levels of financial literacy are fairly low, although levels of confidence seem to be quite high in some spaces, right? So people are projecting what they think they know about how the world works, but it changes, right? Mm-hmm. The advice my father gave me about money just isn't relevant. You can try and tease out some core rules about X, Y, and Z, you know, but in reality, the financial system has changed significantly since his day. So even if you do get advice, it's not always relevant. The second problem is that there is a massive lack of trust in the financial system, and it's probably justified. The problem with that is that when you lose trust in one system, people look for it somewhere else and isn't necessarily any better. What you have to understand about the personal financial system is that if you know how it works, it's amazing in the way it works. Think about this. You can take money from the future, bring it to today, and go and buy yourself a house. You can take money from today, put it into a 1K, and it will grow and double and triple in the future. And you can do both of these things simultaneously. But it's this amazing time machine that if you understand how it works, it's just incredible. I mean, we talked about the money story, about going anywhere in the world with some dead presidents and being able to do that. So when it works, and if you understand how it works, it's incredible. But if you don't, you're going to suffer because it will chew you up and spit you out. And so when you look at how that really works, it means that for those of us that understand it, in general, we get we save more, we earn more, we get higher returns, and we borrow cheaper. And it's the opposite of people that don't understand the system or were born into a space where they basically never got a chance, right? They never got to engage with it at the level that we have, and that's all luck. The thing is, though, that we pathologize as a society. We blame individuals for things that the culture creates. We blame people for being poor when they were born into a place that gave them very, very, very few opportunities to actually get out of that space. So we pathologize the individual. We look at your behaviors. We look at your choices. And we just go, hey, you know, you're just not doing well enough. You're just not enough. And that's really, really wrong. Because when you look at money, no one chooses to be ashamed. No one chooses to be anxious. No one chooses to be resentful. No one you choose to be jealous or angry, any of those things, right? So you got to have compassion for people that find themselves in that space because they ain't choosing it. Operating with what is your subconscious inheritance. It's what you picked up around when you grew up from the people around you, from the culture around you, and you're operating under that at a subconscious level. And if you have a very, very narrow set of choices, then your ability to kind of transcend that and move into a better space where you've got kind of, you know, more wiggle room, where you can actually build up a tiny buffer to protect yourself against emergencies and funding needs, and you don't have to go to the local loan shark or whatever else it is, or you have, you know, ability to interact with the formal banking system, then your choices are limited, and you know, that is not anybody's fault. So I have a great deal of the one thing that is, you know, runs through all of my work with anybody in this space is that don't blame yourself because you can't do something very well that no one ever showed you how to do.
That is really good advice, actually.
That's probably why it took me so long to figure out marriage, because no one really taught me about marriage, right, baby? Is that what it is?
I don't have a manual on myself.
Dennis, this is important for me. This one is really important for me because as an entrepreneur, I think entrepreneurs are out there always trying to find the answer. When I've learned in life that really you should be looking to find out what's the question, continue to ask the questions that will lead to the answers. So if you're listening to this, what's a powerful question that somebody can ask themselves about their relationship with money?
Questions. You're absolutely right. Questions are much more interesting. Somebody once says the smart man knows the answers, the wise man asks the questions. And I really do think that's, you know, that's certainly from my coaching experience, that is where I'd move to. I came from a defensive place in life where I've always used my intellect. I was the smart guy, the witty guy, you know, trying to get through life. And my childhood wounding was to try and always have a smart answer. It didn't work very well with my father. He didn't appreciate it, which didn't help the situation. And I just, you know, realized so much later on in life that the questions are much to help people understand, and in fact to ask questions of people and of yourself. So the answer to your question, yeah. I mean, I think if you're asking, you know, what do people ask themselves to understand their relationship with money? I just want to go off into a very small little segue, because the word, you know, relationship with money is used a lot. And I think it's important to understand what that actually means, because the answer to kind of what question you want to ask is kind of, well, what are you asking about? So relationship with money is made up of three components. What do I believe about myself? What do I believe about money? And what do I believe about money in myself? Right. Most people never think about the first bit. The first bit is crucial, because what I believe about myself is the cornerstone of my relationship with everything. My relationship with work, my relationship with food, my relationship with exercise, my relationships with my wife, my relationship with my kids. What I feel about myself, what I can do, be, or have. This is before we get into the money space, right? And so if I feel good about myself, I believe I'm competent, I have confidence in my knowledge and decision-making processes, doesn't mean I know everything, but that's okay, because I'm all right to ask. I don't mind asking, because I don't worry that I need to have the answer to everything, because I can't know the answer to everything. So okay to ask. It's not a sign of vulnerability. It's a sign of strength. I believe I have a level of control over my future. I take ownership of my outcomes. My self-worth does not depend on my net worth, my possessions, any of that stuff, what I drive, what's on my wrist, right? I am enough in myself, right? Now, the world conspires against that. Childhood conspires to tell you you're not enough. And then the world reinforces it 24/7 because it wants to sell you something. But I'm here to tell you, you both know this, you are both enough. But to all of the people listening to this, you are enough, and you always, always were enough, okay? But that's really important to believe, because if I don't believe I'm enough, there's going to be a whole set of behaviors that are going to undermine me in my relationships with work and all sorts of things. If it was really dangerous for me when I grew up to ask for something, whether it was money or anything, it's not going to get easier in life. And you touched on solopreneurs. You know, solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, they have to do lots of really difficult things, things maybe they never had to do before, like fundraising and dealing with corporate taxes and stuff like that. So it needs to be safe for them to ask. So, and there's a personal relationship with money that leaks into the business relationship. We might come back to that if we've got a bit more time. If I feel good about myself, I am enough, right? And it's okay to ask. Now, if I feel good about money, then money itself is a tool to achieve well-being. It's not the work of the devil, the root of all evil. It's not this thing, the only thing that matters, or something we don't talk about, all that stuff that floats around. It's not this unknown or confusing thing that I don't understand. It's important to be good with money, but money is not the most important thing in the world. And then when I feel good about mm-hmm. money in myself, I understand how money works. Thinking about money doesn't make me feel anxious or ashamed or inadequate, because that's around a lot of inadequacy or guilty. I'm comfortable having open money conversations. I'm comfortable asking for what I'm worth and engaging with the financial system. And that's really important. What a lot of people struggle with is articulating and asking for what they're worth. And so I'm the kind of person at an identity level who manages their finances well. So that is a healthy relationship with money, and it's the key to financial well-being. You need all three bits, but never forget the first bit. So now, what's the most powerful question people should ask themselves to understand their relationship with money? It depends on which bit you really want to look at. But the question is, what do I believe that I can do, be, or have with money? That's the question. Put it down. There's be, you know, what I believe that I can do, be, or have with money. And write down what I believe that I can do, be, or have with money. And then look at those beliefs. There'll be more than one, usually. And ask, is that belief helping me? How is that belief helping me? How is it undermining me? So one of my core beliefs was straight saving was really, really important. Fantastic, you might think. And it is. How was it undermining me? It was undermining me because although I had a strong saving mentality, it meant that I really didn't like spending money. So, you know, I wasn't quite the Grinch in the family, but it meant that the message my children got was that saving money was more important than their happiness, right? So there was a downside to it. There's always, in extreme circumstances, there's always an upside and a downside, right? We tend to, you know, we don't have this happy space in the middle. People say, are you a spender or are you a saver? Well, actually, the healthy space is in the middle because I need to spend, I need to save, I need to borrow, I need to invest, I need to do all of these things. And then when my identity gets attached to the saver, or in my case, let's just say the saver mentality or the spender mentality, the saver mentality, if that's me, I struggle to spend money. I'm much, much better at it now. I can assure you after 7 years of money coaching, much, much better. And my learning in this space about myself is that it's not, I don't need more money. I mean, it'd be nice to have more money, but what I needed to understand about my relationship with money is I needed to feel safe with the money I had, right? That was the inner work I needed to do. So the most powerful question I needed to ask myself was, you know, how do I feel safe with the money that I have? I felt safe with who I am. I'm still working on some bits of that as well, right? But, you know, that belief that I needed to save and that belief, so my father's messaging was very, very clear. You never waste money. It's too important to waste. And so we never wasted money. And so that creates this tension later on when you want to freely spend, when you want to be generous, when you want to give, and yet you're just being pulled back into this, don't spend money, it's too important. And if anything that was not kind of keeping us alive was a waste. And you know, the funny thing is with my father, that kind of he died at 99 and a half. He got to the end of life, actually in his 60s, 70s, it got a bit more relaxed. I think it's kind of part of this thing of, you know, getting the kids out of the house, get the jobs and stuff like that. And he'd go out and he'd buy a painting. And we'd go, what? I thought we had no money. And he'd go and he'd go, well, you know, do we have money or do we not have money? You know, and he'd get it in Greek, but with funny Greek accents. Like, you know, it's very confusing because I have lived with you for 50 years. And to me, the message was very clear that if we weren't very careful, we'd be on the streets. So now all of a sudden you can find money. And so, you know, again, so, you know, confusing even that age. And so, yeah, you know, growing up and around, we talk about the three C's, you know, did you have conflict, confusion, or contradiction in the behaviors of the people you around? Because that is going to be difficult to anchor a healthy relationship with money around. So, what do I believe? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it unhelpful? Where are the limits of this? And you can go to the opposite extreme, which is, you know, I believe that most important thing I can do with my money is to give it to other people. Beautiful. I love that. So how is it helping you? What need is it fulfilling? And where are the limits? What's the difference between generous and overly generous? What's the line between confident and overly confident? And are you resourcing yourself in the process?
I like that. Dennis, what's the one message you want to give to the listeners? I think you mentioned it, something about compassion. I'm going to remind you because it was so needed.
Most of my clients have gone through, they show up with different things. A lot of them have been through this process with money, which is, I'm an adult, it's only numbers. Why is it so hard? Mm-hmm. Why can't I do this? What's wrong with me? Even financial literacy in itself is potentially shaming, because if you can't get your head around financial literacy for whatever reasons, maybe, you know, your brain doesn't work that way. Maybe you don't like numbers. Maybe you're bad with maths. Maybe you were shamed at school around maths. Financial literacy isn't going to be easy for you. And then you might, well, even you can't even do financial literacy, what's wrong with you? So, you know, my message is, in general, if I had the experiences you grew up with, and I had taken those messages that I got, bad experiences, turned it into messages, those messages about myself, about money and money, myself turned into my beliefs, and my beliefs drive my behaviors, I'd be in exactly the same space as you.
Right.
There's nothing wrong with you. This is just how, that's how that process works, right? The babies are born with no sense to self. They don't have a sense of self. Their sense of self is developed from the environment that they grow up in. It can't come from anywhere else. Yes, some DNA pieces as well. So there it is, you know, there's a bunch of hardwiring, and there's intergenerational trauma that can be transmitted. But, you know, fundamentally, the sense of self comes from the messaging and the behavior of the people around them. And so I say, hey, you know what? None of this is your fault. Right, you didn't consciously choose any of this stuff. We don't talk about money in a healthy way. You were never shown how to understand it. It's difficult. The financial system is not easy to understand. Money is not easy to understand in that, you know, how you feel about it. So it's a message of deep compassion. And what I say to people is, if you want to change things, you need to have self-compassion. Self-compassion and curiosity. It's hard to look at the parts of your life that cause you discomfort. But when you understand that that wasn't your choice, that was just based on reactive behavior of people all around you. And we don't blame them either, right? They're living with their own subconscious inheritance and their own issues. It's not a parent blaming thing. I have deep compassion for my father, what he went through, and how his reactivity was formed. We've traced it back through many generations. Where he got his reaction from. And he transmitted it to me. And I transmitted it to my kids. But then I learned about my behavior, and I learned about myself and repairing my relationship with my children. And the one thing that I would say about money coaching that it's given me an amazing ability to open up communication to my children that I never possessed before. So that's Deborah's gift to me and Deborah's gift to the world. And I'm learning to get better at it every single day. But everybody can have this if they feel supported and safe. And so Juno or Juliet, do you have a sport, a favorite sport that you play or follow?
It's a great question. I used to be a rabid tennis player. I used to play soccer. I used to love to watch baseball. Cool. I would watch football. Now, as you get older and you have six kids, you sort of don't watch anything.
Watch them play volleyball. Right.
Watch them play sports.
Yeah. Play tennis, right? So when you play tennis and you want to get better at tennis, what do you do?
Right.
Where do you go if you want to get better at something?
You lace them up.
You go to a coach.
Yep. You lace them up and you go to the tennis courts.
And then you go to a coach, right? You want to get better at tennis. Yes, there's practice, right? Mm-hmm. And you say, my backhand or my forehand or whatever else it is. Now, money coaching is a little more complex because we have to go backwards. We don't start with where you are and then try and correct you. We need to understand why you are where you are. So we need to go back a little bit of time. But isn't it curious that money, this thing that runs through our lives, that we have to use it every single day. If I have a problem with alcohol or drugs or gambling, I can stay away from places that will get me into trouble. If I have a a lack of confidence or a challenging relationship with money, I can't hide from it. So it goes through our lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The one thing we need to use every single day, the one thing that's really important to have a confident and healthy relationship with, positive, conscious interaction with your finances is the key to financial well-being. You need a coach, right? It's the obvious thing, because it's not taught at school, and your parents aren't the best people to teach you about money, because they've got their own stuff going on. And schools aren't the best places to teach you about money, because teachers have their own stuff going on. You want to get better at anything in life, you go and see a coach. And a coach is going to sit there and they're going to listen to you and connect with you. And they're not going to judge you. And they're going to help you understand why you do what you do and help you to move forward. As you know from our process, we map out all of the hidden patterns of behaviors and emotions that we have around money. We put the good ones at the top, positive ones at the top, the challenging ones at the bottom. And we work to remove the influence of the challenging ones. And that process takes people towards the person they want to be. And that's what's so beautiful about it, because we can all get there. We can try and work it out ourselves, but in the end, if you really want to make progress, you really want someone that's going to help you, hold you accountable, understand, help you understand what's going on, and help you move forward from that. So I'm not trying to plug money coaching, but really, if you think about the role that money plays in our society, it's so important to understand what's driving your behaviors and making sure that they're not undermining you, because there's always something in there. It's always something. Even the generous becomes overly generous, or the saving becomes mean and stingy. And you know, in the UK, I don't know what you call them in the US, but when I speak to a lot of planners and advisors, and they have wealth, the worried wealthy who can't spend money, right? And that's for a number of reasons, because if you've been taught to save all your life and accumulating, and wham, now I'm at the point you get your last regular paycheck, someone says, hey, now you can go out and spend it all. Guess what? That doesn't turn on a dime, does it? So, you know, that process of accumulating and then trying to go, how am I going to make this last? So great uncertainty, investment return uncertainty, longevity uncertainty, healthcare cost uncertainty. And you're telling people, hey, just go out and, you know, live a little bit, get on that cruise, you know, buy that car you've always wanted, whatever. It's not that straightforward.
You know, yeah.
Money issues aren't always about stopping spending. Sometimes there are about just understanding what's going on. And I don't mind what people choose, as long as it's financially sustainable and as long as they're doing it consciously.
Yeah.
The problem with extreme frugality,
you
deny yourself things you could afford that you really want and would be really, really beneficial to you.
You didn't plug money coaching, but I'm going to, because I was against it until I did it. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is the one thing I definitely needed. You know, I've done coaching. We both have been coaches for years, but the money coaching, I think, wrapped it all up for me. And it helped our marriage. And like you said, it helped our relationship with our children. Because I think that's overlooked sometimes. I don't think we realize
the damage
we do to our kids. And all the years, you know, the complaints. Oh my gosh, how much did you spend? All those little comments, the facial expressions we make. All we're putting we're actually helping with their money story. And so, in 20 years from now, they'll be probably with Deborah doing money coaching, blaming us for their issues. No, but it really did. I think it greatly impacted our relationship with our children. So I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
And I think that's been the most healing for us, which has been incredible. And so I'm going to put that out there. I really do tell people everyone needs money coaching, whether you're good with money or you're not. There's a story behind it. And to uncover it is actually very fascinating. It really is.
Dennis, this is a perfect segue. Where can the listeners get a hold of you, learn more about you, learn more about money coaching?
So you can find me at Cambridge Money Coaching in the UK, www, I think, Cambridge Money Coaching. You can find me on LinkedIn. Please come and connect with me on LinkedIn. I've been putting out a weekly post on money for the last 2 years. So I do put stuff out there and it's pretty good. Most of it goes on the website as well, but hey, come and like and comment and connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me at the Money Coaching Institute as well, but just come and find me on Cambridge Money Coaching or or as I said, Dennis Harlakis at LinkedIn. And yeah, let's keep spreading the word because it's a healing journey. I mean, we all come out of childhood with some kind of issues because, as I say, nobody's parents are correct. And that's okay. And that's totally normal. It's not, I'm not anti-parents. as a dad myself, I know most of the mistakes I made. Yeah. Well, I hope I did. And I'm trying to, you know, open up communication channels with my kids. And when I look at it and I go, you know, what I learned was to be able to look at a child instead of having only one mode, which was fix or deny. You know what they say, you know, do you want to be heard, helped or hugged? And just developing late in life the capacity to listen to one of my children and go, wow, that just sounds really hard. I'm so sorry. Tell me more about that. Yeah. Which don't always, guys don't do that very naturally with their kids, not if they have, you know, the kind of traditional parenting style. And that's made so much difference. And I'm so honored.
Yeah.
I'm so
just that alone. Yeah.
It's really interesting to hear that from you because that is my experience. Yeah. I can talk about the money piece and my anxiety piece as I have done. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, a work in progress. And I'm so much happier with myself and so much easier to be around and feel so much better and less anxious. And it's a journey. It's a healing journey around money and around myself. Mm-hmm. And most people prefer the fear they know to the joy they don't. And I just want to shout it out to all of you. There's joy out there. Come and join us.
After being in the corporate world for 30 plus years, I think God decided to close the door on Dennis's career in the US and decided to open another door in the UK. He goes into the UK, he's sitting in front of his computer one evening and he's watching a webinar with the Money Coaching Institute. And there's Deborah Price and he gets drawn into the webinar and he's like, this is what I've been looking for my whole life. This is what I need. He didn't do it once. He did it twice. He jumped on again, and then he went through the program. He started coaching, and then all of a sudden, he becomes a trainer for the Money Coaching Institute. And I was actually in one of the sessions that Dennis taught. Phenomenal teacher. Thank you. Excellent teacher. Really has a great grasp of asking questions, a great grasp of really, truly listening. Not superficially listening, but actually listening to the person. Seek first to understand, then to be understood. And I think that's one of his gifts as a money coach. And as you've heard over the last 45 minutes or so, that's what this conversation has been really all about. It's been about quote-unquote money, but to me, it's really been a deeper dive into having compassion for yourself, really understanding what the relationship with money is. I love what you said over here. I've got all my notes here. You should see my wife's notes. My wife's got like 3 pages worth of notes here. This is incredible. I'll leave you with this. I love the connection before solutions. I think for anybody out there, before you go out, especially as an entrepreneur, before you try to raise capital, before you try to solve a problem, connect with the person, with the individual, with whoever you're trying to solve the problem with. Connect with them first and then solve the problem after. Baby, any final words, baby?
No, I love that.
Okay.
Yeah, you don't know what the problem is. You don't know what the problem is till you've connected with them.
Exactly. Thank you. You don't know what the real problem is.
Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. We want to thank everybody for listening to the Julie and Gino podcast. We are Julia and Gino Barbaro, co-founders of Barbaro 360, and we'll see you on next week's show. Take care, everyone. Take care, Dennis.
Thank you. Thank you very much.